C1PH. Number 5B.
The next one is just a continuation of this thought, namely, in truth, shows that heredity and mortal mind are one. Now she takes heredity, which is really the counterfeit of truth, our true inheritance, and mortal mind are one. The predisposing cause and the exciting cause are both mental. This is necessary to see in heretical beliefs and diseases, because there we feel that because a predisposing cause or a remote cause is at work, that it is more difficult to handle. Why? Nobody knows why. It's a belief that we have put up. We have put up the belief that something which is acute is much more easy to handle than something which is chronic. Something which has just happened is easier to handle than something which has its cause long time ago, perhaps in earlier years, in earlier centuries, perhaps even in earliest ages and so on, like the archetypal beliefs and the mythological beliefs and so on, the magic beliefs which most people still have to a certain extent, that they are more difficult to handle because they lie back afar. You see, the human mind has some respect of age, of old, I mean not age of people getting older, but of something which is very old, of long tradition. The longer it has existed, the more one thinks it is true and it has existence. Therefore, we have to see that if we want to correct our whole makeup, which to a great extent is heretical, see, most of us just are like our father or our mothers were. Most of us, we are subject quite a lot to heretical beliefs. Heretical beliefs is not just because our father or our mother had this and this disease that we have it too, but it's the character, the mannerism, the inner psychological disposition, everything which we have to take into account. And one of the big things which we have to work out is certainly that we are not the image of our forefathers. That we are the image of God, and that we are not just one of the same family, with the same characteristics, with the same way of doing things, with the same narrowness or I don't know what, and idiosyncrasies, etc. So let's see that what our true inheritance is, and that inheritance, and we are one, and not the heretical beliefs, and we are one. And the last one goes just further to the tone of love and shows that fear and disease are one. They are both mental. She gives here a case of that the fright of a mother prior to the birth of the child may produce deformity on the child. And you know how true that is on the level of belief. How true that is that some fright, some experience, something that is of a great psychological importance that may have happened to the mother while she was expecting the child, that can have its effect on the child, mentally, psychologically, or even physiologically. We have so many incidents of that. I just remember one case that where a mother, when she was awaiting a child, she was run over by a horse, and she tried to hold that horse back with her right hand. And when the baby was born, it had no right hand. See, that's a good description of what she wants to present here, that fear You see, that fear and disease is one. That enormous psychological impression she had, and the her attempt to prevent it with the hand had such an effect that it was imaged forth on the body. So let's see how much we are imaged forth on the body of what is in our parents. They have the same nose as our mother had, and so on. It's all right if it's only the nose. Well, you see, in this way she just goes through that whole subject of principle. And if I summarize it, it's like this quickly. It just shows fundamentally to us that any physical or physiological manifestation by itself, it doesn't stand by itself, that it is one with a mental cause. Therefore, in mind, she says, mortal mind and disease is one. Then in spirit, that there is only one basis, the only basis for all classifications of disease, and this mortal mind. Therefore, mortal mind and body is one in soul. In principle, all the theories which men have put forth and their effects are one. In life, she shows that the majority of beliefs and the effects are one. In truth, that the hereditary belief and its effect is one. Or that the remote cause, the predisposing cause and its effect is one. And that fear and its effect is one. So, and it's always mortal mind. So we have here the oneness of mortal mind, if you want to say, one mortal mind and all the gamut of error which is the outcome of it. For us, a simple statement that everything which we can see as an effect which is disharmonious can be traced back just to one thing, mortal mind. If I have traced it back to mortal mind, well then I see I can handle it with the divine mind, because the divine mind and health is one too. So we go to the next subject of life. What's the connection now between the last subject and the subject of life? Last subject said mortal mind and its effect is one. All right, then. The more I have mortal mind, the more disease I have. The less mortal mind I have, the less disease I have. So this is the tone of life here, which I have summarized and said, mortal mind's method increases disease. See, you have life as the increase of disease, whereas an understanding of Christian Science is the metaphysical method which heals disease. I could also have said which diminishes disease. Life has to do with that multiplication. Well, in the negative sense, it is the more mortal mind I entertain, the more disease multiplies within our consciousness. The less mortal mind I have, therefore the more understanding I have, the more I experience health. Again, a very simple rule which we know so well. How does she explain it? First, as mind. I have written here, in proportion to our understanding of immortal being, animal magnetism, being self-contradictory, is disarmed. You see, again, it's not about metaphysics here. It's again in proportion as we have an understanding of immortal being. In that proportion, mortal mind is disarmed, disappears, diminishes. It's a sense of life, of growing, or of falling back on itself. She speaks here that in proportion to our understanding of Christian Science, we are freed from the belief of heredity, freed from the belief of mind in matter, freed from animal magnetism. You just can see in proportion to our understanding. It isn't yet science. I point this out because afterwards you come to science, and so I have to point out that still we are preparing consciousness through metaphysics, so that consciousness is becoming transparent for the influx of the science of truth itself. Because we are not really free just in the measure of our understanding. Man is free. He is free born, but this isn't yet the subject here. She leads thought gently up to the point where she can see that then we can handle error in science. So this chapter is a wonderful help for me, because while I was talking on the levels of science, one could, if one has listened properly, one could have got the wrong impression that I say that you don't have to treat a disease, that you don't have to heal yourself, you just are healed. Well, that is not true. What I was saying is that there is an ascending way in the chart and a descending way in the chart. And the ascending way is always through metaphysics to the point of science. So this chapter here comes in, I think, at the right time after these talks on the levels, because they bring us down to common sense and to brass tacks. All right. Brass or iron tacks, I don't mind which one. But it's certainly very solid. Certainly very solid. And so let's be honest with ourselves. We have liked, and I have liked, those talks on the levels. But the chapter on physiology has its place in it, and it shows now, come back to solid ground and see that you are not going up into the clouds, but that you build on solid ground. And to build on solid ground is first to clear up in consciousness properly all those beliefs which we have been considering through the first five steps here. Here really is that we improve, so to say, our health in the measure to our metaphysical understanding of Christian Science. Then, as spirit, she shows only the living method of metaphysics, unmixed with other methods, can perform sudden cures. So we get spirit. Spirit is that which is unmixed. The counterfeit of spirit is to mix metaphysical methods with all sorts of other methods, with hypnotism, with spiritualism, with electricity, and I don't know what. So here again we see that we can only improve our state of health and being and longevity. I wish you would once speak to me in Swiss German. I would like to have some laughs too. So it's in the proportion to our understanding. That understanding as spirit must be unmixed. So it is a real good work which we have to do to see that inwardly we are not going to deviate from the metaphysical basis and mix up the metaphysical with some other method. Then as soul, we have here, metaphysical healing is not restricted by space. The soul is not limited, not restricted by space. It is based on the spiritual capacity. Soul has infinite capacity. It's based on the infinite capacity of immortal mind reading. Well, she doesn't speak about mind reading, the term mind reading in here. I smuggled it in. Just that you know when you read it that you say, well, Mrs. Eddy doesn't use that term, but she uses the meaning of it. She says that really we can heal patients that are present as well as those that are absent, meaning that space is no hindrance to the metaphysical treatment. But also she says that through immortal mind, we can see things which we can't see with our mortal eyes. That's mind reading, really. See, that we, if we have the capacity of soul, that then we can see the mental cause of things, and therefore deal with the mental cause of disease. And the measure of how much we are one with the divine mind determines the capacity of seeing with the divine mind, which eye has not seen. As principle, results an education of any method of treatment creates also a demand for that treatment. See, it's again in principle, just as in the subject before, when we come to principle, it has always to do with the sciences, with education, with other sciences, with human theories. And here she shows how every medical method has its advocates. Advocates?
Yes.
See, so, well, that's so important to know today, where so many new medical theories are brought forward. You always have people who believe in it. And those people who believe in it, they get the effect of these theories to a great extent, showing that not the theory is right, but their belief in it is strong enough. That's a great difference. Did I make that clear? See, you can, as she says here, you can even educate the wild horse to take a cold without a blanket. One can educate people to anything. And educating mentality in a realm of any belief brings the result of that belief. Always. But that is not science. That is not metaphysics. And that is not something extraordinary. It just proves the fundamental point that what Mrs. Eddy says, that mortal mind and its effect are one. That's what we had before. So we can go out tomorrow and put forward any new theory about, well, I don't know what now, about perhaps if you eat apples that you get this and this effect, and if you have enough vitamins, you get this and this effect, that if you make enough exercise, you get this and this effect. You can put up any theory. And if you have people who believe in it firmly and who are devoted in it, they get the benefit of that belief. But it's still belief. So it's just exchanging one belief against the other belief. So it says here, the preference of mortal mind for a certain method creates a demand for that method. All these things have to be seen through in order not to be duped by all those various theories. Then, life as life, I have written here, medical mindedness is the prolific source of disease and should be uprooted. It's life as life, you see, it's medical mindedness, and using the method of medicine is a prolific source, prolific sense of fullness of life, and should be uprooted. Life should uproot everything which is unlike life. So she says, all those treatises on anatomy, physiology, on health, treatises which promote nothing else but sickness, that they should be given up. Mortal mind should be taught to uproot its false sowing. Well, you see, I can quickly go over all these various points because they are common ground to us. But I would say they are so common ground to us that they would be worthwhile considering anew, afresh, without any preconception, and just consider them and say, do I believe in that? Do I actually think according to that? Or is that just a theory which I have been taken in? But do I actually live up to that, think up to that, feel up to that? It's worthwhile reconsidering, re-exploring it. Because we feel that so often we are subject to these beliefs. Then as truth, I have written here, in science, the understanding of the resuscitating law of life, not faith in healers, is the real healer. So often in these subtones of truth, she speaks about what is really healing, what is the real health, what is a real healing. Always the touchstone, so to say, of is it true? What is the true healing? It's here where she says something very practical, namely that so often people are satisfied if they see their healers busy and being doing things. See, a patient, he feels quite at loss if the doctor doesn't come very often and look at it and take time to look at it and so on. He feels, then I'm not cared for properly. And so it is in Christian Science. Many patients feel if the practitioner has no time to talk every day an hour to them and ask every other day how he feels and how things are and so on, that they are not cared for. And here she says, but in science one must understand the resuscitating law of life. And that this law has within itself the seed of resuscitating the case. Which shows here that very important point, that really true healing is not to rely on a practitioner, not to rely on what he's busy about it, as so to say, but to rely that truth, which is healing, is really the practitioner. That truth is doing the work. And then one is not so much concerned about the practitioner himself. And finally, in love, we have that medical methods add more fear. See, always when it's about, when the subject comes to love, it's a lot about fear. Medical methods add more fear to the patient's mind, while the metaphysical method casts out fear through the divine mind. She speaks here of something which we have also been considering last year, namely that the physician can really increase disease instead of healing disease. It's what they call today these... can you remember what is called the disease created by the physician? No. Well, it will come back to me. They speak today a lot that doctors really can increase disease by the very way of dealing with the patient. That, for instance, if the doctor shows fear, if he is very in earnest, if he looks at the patient very depressed way, in a hopeless way, and so on, that this increases the disease in the patient instead of healing it. And here she puts that out, that the physician may unwittingly add more fear to the invalid. Instead of furnishing thought with fear, we should try to cast out fear with the influence of divine love. Just showing that fear increases disease. See, life and love. Whereas love diminishes disease. Well, this is the fifth step, which I can perhaps summarize like this, that in this fifth we see what does improve health and what does multiply disease. It's all about life. That which multiplies disease is mortal mind's method of considering disease, of looking at disease, of talking about disease, and so on. Whereas the metaphysical method is to take away from thought more and more in its fullness the false beliefs, and that this is helping the case. So, in mind, she would say that this metaphysical method really disarms animal magnetism. It begins to disarm animal magnetism. But that, in spirit, this metaphysics must be kept pure from other methods, that it must be unmixed by other healing methods. In soul, that this metaphysical method of mind reading has infinite capacities, is unrestricted, that it can help over distance, over time, that it can see through what the physical senses cannot see, that they can that with the immortal mind we can discern the error which needs to be destroyed. Then in principle it shows that one can educate people into any belief, and that the effects of that belief correspond to the belief in that theory. So that is no proof about the validity of such a theory. It only proves one thing, that cause and effect on the same level of belief is working. Nothing else is proved by it. That medical method can promote disease if they are not properly applied, that they are not always methods that help to heal disease. And then in truth, it shows that only really the resuscitating law of life is the real healer, that people can't heal. Neither busy healers nor any other can heal. It's the law of life which is the real healer. And then in the last tone of love, she shows that the metaphysical method is to cast out fear with love. That if fear is cast out, then we have taken away the foundation of all mortal mind's method of creating disease. Well, this has brought us to a little stop.